Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Is that the ad bell?
Hark, the herald ad bell rings.
He is telling you some things.
He's telling you that we are doing a Sight Guys live show in London at Jamboree on the 26th of September. And we, and he, the ad bell, for he is a he, wants you to be there.
But if you can't be there for some reason, like, for example, you live anywhere that isn't London or the UK, why would you do that? You can get a digital ticket, which is now available at sightguys.co.uk/tickets. And if you want an actual in-person ticket, you can go to sightguys.co.uk/tickets.
So if you want to come and watch us in real life, or you want to watch us live on the internet making all the mistakes that usually get edited out, go to sightguys.uk/tickets. sightguys.co.uk/tickets.
If you do that, you get to see the live podcast, the Q&A, the meet and greet, the interactive quickfire quiz, our special guest Chanel Williams, and the brand new never seen before merch. Isn't that exciting, Luke?
Goodness me, I might have wet myself. And 20% off for patrons as well. I've wet myself even more. Let's get on with the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey and as always I'm joined by my co-host Luke Cutforth and this week's special guest Joris Lachen.
Hey!
Whee!
Hello!
This week we're talking about Ritalin rats with a touch of the tism, but first, we have a wee review. This one is an Apple review. Head there and give us a 5-star review, please. It says, absolutely great podcast. This is a great podcast for people who like science and people that like listening to random stuff. I personally really like that Corey knows everything, and Luke, yeah, he's Luke, right. Anyway, I listen to this podcast every day before bed, and when I'm sad or stressed for some reason, it helps me calm down. Would definitely recommend. Sorry, Luke. Luke's an amazing guy and all. He's very funny.
I get too many comments like that for comfort, I think.
I actually forgot that that's what this said. I was going to tell you beforehand, but you raw-dogged it.
I'm also here.
And I've got a question for everyone who's watching or listening. If you're listening, get down to the YouTube comments and answer this question. The question is, do you have autism or ADHD or perhaps both?
Good question.
Yes, I have both. Funnily enough, I like to say I have ADHD, but I am autistic. But that's just that's another debate. But yes, I have both.
What luck that you're here for this episode on combined autism and ADHD. Whose idea was that? That was really good. Is there anything else that ties you to this topic?
Well, I run a coaching group, the Meerkat Squad, and that also is targeted towards people with autism and ADHD or people who think they might have both. And because there's very little, there's not much research about it. And I had a conversation just before coming here, actually, and it's only this last edition of the DSM-5 that has where it's acknowledged that it is possible to have both, because up until, well, the previous edition or recently, you could only have ADHD or autism and not both. But now I guess you'll have to explain what the DSM-5 is.
Oh, no, our listeners know what the DSM-5 is. We've got a poster with a DSM-5 on it.
All right.
Yeah, no. But I mean, for anyone that doesn't know what the DSM-5 is, Luke, do you want to take it away?
It's that book that explains things and then says, but only if it affects your life.
Okay, sure.
That's what it claims it does, but it doesn't actually do that for autism. But
yeah. So the DSM-5 is essentially a big book of mental health stuff, including neurodevelopmental disorders and whatnot. Basically, if something's going on with your head or your brain, it's probably going to be in the DSM-5. And the reason that that thing exists, it's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. The idea is to help people diagnose those, let's say, disorders or disease, all of these sorts of things, right? Anything going on with your brain that makes you not like the average normal person, whatever that is, it might be in the DSM-5, and it tells you all the things to tell whether someone has that thing or a different thing or nothing at all. And as Luke says, yes, one of the key points in every single entry of the DSM-5, more or less, is if it negatively affects your life, then it's a thing. If it doesn't negatively impact your life, stop whining. Just carry on.
More or less. Yeah, but the irony is that that principle, they don't stick to it, especially when it comes to autism diagnosis, because it's not based on the lived experience of, or the experience of the autism, but it's purely based on external factors or external traits of the way it manifests from the outside. And that also contributes to that idea, that silencing of autistic people, because we don't actually, there's not much in the way of basing the diagnosis or on the experience of autistic people. And it's, there's a lot of science that is being done. There's a lot of literature that is being made from people from the outside observing autism rather than how it feels from the inside. So, and that's also the case with the DSM, and which makes it even more unfair that they claim to do exactly the opposite of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing as well. I don't ever want to present it as the be-all and end-all. I think it's a very useful tool, right, for a lot of things. But there are definitely problems. And you pointed out a really big one at the top of this episode, which I was going to mention later. So well done for pulling a Luke. No, don't apologize.
I just realized that the DSM-5 accidentally validates the social model of disability.
Yeah.
Because if the social model allowed people to not be affected by autism or anything that's in the DSM-5, then they wouldn't qualify for autism because it wouldn't negatively impact their life.
Yeah.
Which is really funny.
It's mad, right?
I don't think they... Wow, woke king DSM-5. I don't think they intended to do
that. Let's not go that far. No, but what I was saying is that you pointed out something really interesting, which was that you couldn't have autism and ADHD until about 2013-14-ish, when the DSM-5 came out. The previous edition, the DSM-4, said, I think it was for ADHD. One of the points of ADHD was, if you've been diagnosed with autism, you don't have ADHD. Sorry.
Poof, it's gone.
Exactly. So the research into this really kind of started in full force only about 10 or so years ago. And a decade is not that long when it comes to studying these conditions, especially when it's developmental conditions that, you know, if you want to do a sort of longitudinal study, as in a study over a period of time, you've only got 10 years to do that. And you've also got to get it through ethics committees. You've got to get it funded. You've got to get it actually published. So that 10 years very quickly goes down to, and you've got to write it as well. So that 10 years very quickly goes down to maybe 8, 7, 6 years to do a long study. And that's not a super long amount of time to get a lot of those out. So there isn't a huge amount of data out there on, let's say, the comorbidity of these two things, but there is some, and maybe we can get into it and also get into the sort of lived experience aspect. But before we get into any of that, we should probably explain what autism and ADHD are. So let's start off with autism. Does anyone want to take a crack at defining autism?
It's a neurotype. I will go down that route. So it means that it's the autistic brain is wired in a way that is different from the norm or the majority or what is what we would call neurotypical. It's a different way, let's put it that way, of processing information. So information that might be sensory input, but that also might be knowledge. So different way of processing knowledge, sensory input, and also different way of feeling emotions and relating with others. So it affects our sociability, the way that we socialize, communicate, express ourselves, relate to others. I think that's the broadest explanation that I could give.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you've covered pretty much all of the bases. I mean, if I'm going to give probably the sort of medical science-y definition off the dome here, so in the comments, don't be too mad if I'm not spot on. It's generally sort of described as a neurodevelopmental condition, strictly, we should point out as well that the NHS, everyone would point out that it's not an illness. Autism isn't a disease, or, I mean, obviously it's autism spectrum disorder, but that word can be loaded in and of itself. It's a neurodevelopmental condition, basically meaning what you've pointed out there, that there's differences in processing information, and that can result in a lot of differences from, and I'm using big old air quotes here, the norm. Mm-hmm. Because the norm, we can maybe get into it later, but the norm is a very nebulous and messy idea that when it comes to psychology or neurobiology is just, that's a tough one. But yeah, I mean, you probably know what autism is. If you want to know in more depth, we've gone ahead and done an actual entire episode on autism, which you can watch right now. And also all of the other episodes we've done on autism. We've covered autism a lot. So yeah, that's a quick overview on autism. Just to give you some stats there, about 700,000 people in the UK have an autism diagnosis. That doesn't mean that's everyone with autism. It's underdiagnosed, particularly in women, cis women specifically. 1 in 100 children in the UK have a diagnosis as well.
And people of colour also for the underdiagnosis. I had to put it there. But
I wonder why that is. I don't know. So also autism hasn't been around for a super long time either. I mean, not even a
It's only just invented recently.
Yes. Yeah, so at the same time, I can't say that. We did a whole episode on why that's not true. Go and watch that episode as well. I realize that if I say that, that's an immediate strike.
Was it not invented by TikTok?
That's fake autism. That's what you're thinking about. Right, yeah. There's real autism, and then there's fake TikTok autism. The easy way to tell the difference is that if you're about 17 or under, that's fake TikTok autism.
Okay. we can go a bit deeper in that.
I think I've got the research in front of me, and I think what it says. Well, I don't know. autism is, off the top of my head, I don't think it's been around for more than 100 years, and if it has, not more than 200, definitely.
By that, do you mean the term
autism? The term autism. Yeah, the term autism, of course.
Autism's only been around for 100 years.
Let's actually dig into this, though, because if I say autism hasn't been around for that long, that doesn't mean that what we class now as autistic people haven't been around. In the same way as saying, there are sexualities that exist now in our current culture and society that didn't exist and couldn't have existed, hundreds, even thousands of years ago, right? So these sort of diagnoses, you can't just think of them as a strict one-to-one with reality, right? They are necessarily influenced by culture. And so when I say autism wasn't around, 100, 200 years ago, I mean what I say. Autism as a concept didn't exist. Autistic people did exist, but autism? It's really difficult to say that
if we're going to go down that route, it's also important to specify has been around in the West, because I've done a webinar on that, and I'm currently writing an article on specifically autism as a social construct. But I want to be very clear, I'm not saying that the whole of autism is only a social construct, but there's an aspect of the understanding of autism that is linked to the social context. The experience of autism will be vastly different depending on your social context, and that's where it's also relevant to mention that, there's underdiagnosis among women, cis women, and people of colour, even more so than it compounds for women of colour. Mm. And that's because of the social context. It's not because, their autism brain is any different, but it's simply the fact that we have learned to spot the traits, the autistic traits, mostly among boys, men, white men, Western white men. Yeah. So that's why. And also because we mentioned, because you said, it's not an illness, but I think it's also important to acknowledge that it can be a disability, not automatically. Some people may not experience their autism as a disability, but others also do. And both experiences are valid. And that also is influenced by the social context, among other things. But yeah.
That's the difficult thing I find as well, because I feel people will take their experience and present it as this is the only one that you can have. Actually, I'm autistic and it's disabling to me, therefore autism is a disability. Cool, great, your experience, other people may feel differently. And that's okay. I mean, as I said, we've done a whole episode on autism where we really dug into that. And I'm happy to get into it again today because it's a really interesting conversation, I find. But let's get back to the sort of prevalence of it. So that was in the UK. In the US, it's about 1 in 36 children have been identified with autism spectrum disorder. This is coming from the CDC. It's they also say, I love the difference between looking at the CDC and looking at the NHS. The CDC notes that autism spectrum disorder is reported to occur in all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. Glad they mentioned it. Would have taken it as a given had you not mentioned it, but glad you did, I guess. It's four times more common among boys than among girls, it says, which, again, isn't necessarily strictly true. It's diagnosed four times more in boys than girls. We're discovering more now that when you teach little girls to be, you know, submissive and keep quiet and follow all these social rules and do what they're told, blah, 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 they will mask their autism different ways. I was actually talking to someone quite close to me, actually. Someone I know very personally, I've known for the entirety of their life, is autistic. And honestly, it wasn't really caught or spotted in that way until too late on, we should say, right? Yeah. It was basically, oh, this little girl has anxiety. And then said, yeah, well, actually, here's the thing. A lot of girls, young girls that present with, the signs of autism actually are just, they just have anxiety. And I was having a discussion with someone about this, and they were saying, yeah, that's a bit mad. It's almost as though you've got the wrong end of the stick, because little girls who are autistic will probably present with symptoms of anxiety rather than the other way around, right? And it's basically, you know, feeding into what you just said there of that sort of cultural bias that really, really infects people's minds, including doctors' minds, including scientists' minds, on how they view these things. So that's kind of an overview on autism. Shall we dive on in to ADHD?
Yeah, I have a quick question. So it sounded, unless I've got it wrong, it sounded like you said that the prevalence of diagnoses in children in the UK is about 1 in 100, and in the US is 1 in 36.
Autism has been identified in 1 in 36 children in the US. That doesn't mean diagnosed. Diagnosis is speaking to a professional and they're saying, autism. That's what they do. That's how they do it. They point at you, they say autism, and you walk out the room, and that's your diagnosis. That's how it works. So
you get an autism. You get an autism.
Oh, are you TikTok? I'm joking. No. So I was saying diagnosed in the UK, but identified in the US, that doesn't strictly mean
That can
diagnosed.
Be teachers, for example.
Exactly, yeah.
Is it the moment that we can talk about self-diagnosis in the case of autism, or do we do that later?
Oh, it's up to you. Do you want to talk about it now, or do you want to bring it up later?
Well, both.
Let's go. Let's not wait.
Yeah, when you talk about identification, the examples that you gave, they were all from outside. But I think that something that is different about autism than potentially ADHD or other neurotypes is precisely because of the DSM not being based on the internal experience, but on outer signs of autism, that doesn't leave much room for self-diagnosis, which in the case of autism is very important, because, as we've said, there are many factors that may make it impossible for someone to have access to a diagnosis. And in the case of autism, because it is so much about the experience, the internal experience and the experience of others from the inside, it is, I think, very important to make it clear that self-diagnosis is okay. And I know that very often people think, oh, well, yeah, but in that case, anyone can fake it. But then I would invite people to just think, what would be the benefits of that?
Shall I tell my story?
Oh, Luke, okay. Please tell your story.
So I was having conversations with people, and a few people said, oh, have you ever wondered whether you have autism at all? So I asked my GP just, and I didn't really do the conversation very well, in that I started with they were like, so why do you think this? Why are you considering this? And I said, well, I've had quite a few conversations where I felt like I was being perfectly polite, and I was just having a conversation, but people were finding me hostile, and I didn't mean that at all. And I know that that's something that people with autism describe, And it honestly confused me, and I didn't have any idea what I was supposedly doing. Maybe I'm just not very self-conscious, whatever. I didn't start with other things that people had said or experiences I have in my own mind. And the GP said, "Are you sure you're not just a rude person who wants an autism diagnosis so they can get away with being rude?" And I never went back. I was just who knows then.
And this is where, you know, as you mentioned, the fact that, you know, the understanding of it is evolving very fast, and we come from not much at all. And this is exactly where we might end up with let's say an old generation of professionals, of healthcare professionals who have the power. Mm. Like, you sit in front of them, they have the power to give you a label that might be life changing or not. Mm. And very often, because the DSM, and because, you know, the mentality is based on the way that it looks from the outside, and usually people who suspect that they might be autistic, they come with a life, like an entire life of experience that very often is quite traumatic. And so we have this horrible clash of, I come with my traumatic experience and doubts and questions and insecurities, and I lay them out, and I say, can you please help me make sense of that experience? And the person on the other side is just like, you do not look like, they don't receive, they don't hear your experience, they just base themselves on, as the DSM suggests, on external traits, and they're like, well, you do not look like what you're talking about. And so we have this misunderstanding, and it is a traumatic situation, and I completely and that's another, that goes to the point of self-diagnosis is valid, because getting a diagnosis, sitting in front of someone who might not be inclined to believe you, when you have to share something that is so intimate about yourself, that itself is scary and traumatic, and people who are autistic know that they are.
Absolutely. No, and I think I want to point out as well that for anyone that knows Luke, that suggestion is genuinely laughable. That's what I'm laughing at. The suggestion that
I'm a horrible person.
The suggestion that Luke is a rude person who wants an excuse, because I swear to God, Luke will see an excuse for himself staring him in the face and avoid it to find a reason why he's actually the problem. Like, but no, you're so right. And I genuinely, and this is something that, you know, I don't really think I've spoken about in the podcast before, but when it comes to self-diagnosis, I really trust an autistic person to tell me whether or not they're autistic. And I've done a lot of reading on autism, as people that watch this show will know, because, you know, we've done a lot of episodes covering autism or touching on autism. And, you know, I feel like I've learned more about autism as an experience from, this is, don't take this the wrong way, people, but from like TikTok and YouTube, from listening to autistic people talk about their experiences, I have been better able to interact with the autistic people in my life through watching those videos and hearing about those experiences rather than reading studies and whatnot into autistic people, because, you know, I feel there is a bit of a disconnect there in between sort of studies that are done and between the actual lived experience. Yeah. And I think the main thing is really getting more autistic people to study autism, because if you've got someone that doesn't have that experience or doesn't truly understand that experience, or you've got someone that's like an autism mum, and when I say autism mum, I don't mean a mother of autistic children. I don't mean an autistic mother with autistic children or an autistic mother with any children. I mean very specifically the kind of mother who is herself not diagnosed with autism, but has a child with autism, and their entire personality and their entire life and perhaps their entire online presence is built around the absolute difficulty and perhaps the joy as well of sacrifice of raising a boy with autism, because it's almost always a boy, by the way. It's almost always a boy with autism. Like, and specifically a boy with autism as well. That's what they'll say.
Yeah, they would be.
That's the kind of thing that I can't stand. And you see a lot of that kind of viewpoint in the literature, right? You see a lot of people not just looking from the outside in, but almost looking down at the people that are trying to find a treatment or a cure or basically anything to make autistic people less annoying to them, rather than looking for things to make autistic people's lives, you know, better for autistic people.
And in the specific case of autism, we have a field with professionals who may not be up to date and who are actively harmful and dangerous. There was, I think it was Dr. Monique Botta, who had compiled certain quotes from science researchers on autism, and they put together some of the worst stereotypes that researchers were saying about autism, and they were extremely dehumanizing. And that exists in the field of in the professional field of psychologists, psychiatrists. So this is very dangerous. It's very dangerous for people who are trying to understand their autism, wondering if they are autistic or not. So this is very difficult to navigate, and also dangerous.
Well, that's the thing. It trickles down, actually. What you're saying there about, you know, awful things that people have said, in research about people with autism or autistic people. I've seen so many people online sort of talk about Asperger's, which isn't a thing, by the way. It's not anymore.
It's
just autism. It was a thing.
That's how I became. I went from being Asperger's to, I changed identity three times. I went from being gifted in France, because I grew up in France, and at the time, so I was a gifted child. I think that the understanding of giftedness is slightly different in the UK and in France. But anyway, that was the label that was assigned to me by psych professionals. And then over time, my understanding of what had been assigned to me as gifted, that changed to, that really looks like Asperger now. And then that was around the time where Asperger's was kind of pushed aside, and we were like, okay, no, there's no such thing as Asperger, it's just autism. So I became autistic.
There you go. Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, I think we should just quickly touch on...
And also the vaccine, of course.
Yeah,
it's a joke. Sarcasm, joke. Which camera do I say that?
We genuinely did an episode on vaccines before the whole pandemic happened that was taken down for COVID misinformation. Before COVID even existed.
Algorithms are not really good at spotting sarcasm.
Yeah, no, there wasn't any sarcasm
because
COVID didn't exist. They took us down for COVID misinformation.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Anyway, I don't want to mess with the YouTube censors on vaccines. No, don't worry. We did it. I say we did it. Our guest did it in the last episode we did on autism, so you're in the clear. Don't you worry. But what I think really is really interesting is that you see, how do I put it? There's this sort of Aspie supremacy thing that I've seen kind of bouncing around online, and I'm going to be perfectly honest here. I would say it's an absolute negative thing, right? You can be autistic. That is fine. I will allow that of you. I'm joking. But there is a pushback against the sort of seeing autism as a disability, right? There's a pushback against all of these negative sort of connotations that come along with autism, which absolutely, all of these negative connotations should be pushed back against. We should dismantle them, get rid of them, all of that sort of stuff, right? But some people then take that step further into saying, well, actually, hold on. Autistic people are really the best people on the planet, right?
Yeah.
The way that we work is better than everyone else. This is, and I just sit down and I look at it and I'm like, guys, no. Like, it's value neutral, right? Like, these things are value neutral. And Asperger's, if anyone doesn't know, it's been folded into autism now, so you can't be diagnosed with Asperger's anymore. Sort of difference, in the UK,
lagging behind. So I had someone suggest that I might have Asperger's as I was going through my ADHD process. So
really?
Talking to specialists, to professionals at the NHS, and one of them suggested that I might have Asperger's, which was in a sense very valid because I was seeking ADHD diagnosis, not autistic diagnosis. So she kind of like confirmed something that I sort of always knew anyway, but using the wrong, in doing so, she also confirmed how out of date she was at the NHS. So that person doesn't necessarily represent the whole of the NHS. And that was 3 years ago, but still.
Okay, so to be fair, 2013, when the DSM-5 came out. So when the DSM-5 came out, that removed the divide between ADHD and autism, meaning you could only have one. It also folded Asperger's into autism spectrum disorder. And in 2021, the ICD, which is the International Classification of Diseases, basically like the DSM-5 in a different font. Let's not worry about it too much. That's when Asperger's was removed from that in 2021. But ultimately, if we're talking about people that are like in the know with this sort of stuff, look, the point is that Asperger's for a little while kind of been on its way out. And I want to kind of say the reason for that. And it's largely because, to put it very simply, Asperger's was just autism but smart.
Yeah.
That is it. And the problem with that is that you then create a divide between autism and autism but people who have a high IQ, and that doesn't make sense because IQ isn't related. It's not relevant. You know, that's like saying, oh, well, actually, it's not just white people. There is white people and then white plus. And white plus is white people with an IQ of above 110. And there you go. Sorry, you're not white plus. You're only white. Like, that sounds ridiculous to you probably. Because it is. It's not related to the thing you're looking at all.
And I think you did a good job in contextualizing Aspie supremacy by saying that usually this is in reaction to potentially years of people feeling like they're a failure, people feeling like they're inferior, because that is the experience of neurodivergent people in general and autistic people as well. So when they finally can have a label and can get a sense of pride and self-acceptance, sometimes they go to the other extreme, which is, well, I am actually superior. But it's interesting because those are people who are still in the process of deconstructing, because it's not the end of the process. If you stop there, you haven't finished your journey, because then, you know, you're skipping the part which is self-acceptance, because if you need to feel superior to accept yourself, then you haven't done the work.
And I think what I want to add to that as well, I don't think we've said explicitly, but it's kind of been the undertone here, is that this isn't just coming from a sort of holistic point of view of, well, actually, Aspie supremacy, in quotes there, is bad for holistic people. No, you're also stepping on autistic people, because there are plenty, like, you know, it's autism spectrum disorder. There are a wide range of experiences amongst autistic people. There are some nonverbal autistic people. There are some autistic people with learning difficulties and learning disabilities, right? And to say this group of autistic people are, in fact, the best people on the planet, we are smarter than everyone else, and we don't need to deal with those silly social rules that you all get bogged down in, like, dude, that's not really like it's fine if you have difficulty sort of, I say, let's say, intuitively understanding and engaging with, you know, social rules or situations or whatever, that's fine, that's a value neutral thing. Also, understanding that is a value neutral thing itself. All of these things are entirely neutral, and no one is better than anyone else because they can or can't do it. That's like saying people that can run a 100-meter hurdle are in fact the best people on the planet. Why? Because I put value on the 100-meter hurdle, and I've arbitrarily decided that that's the determining factor for the best people on the planet. But we should get into ADHD.
Yeah, sorry.
Clearly, we're almost displaying that there. So ADHD, does anyone want to take a crack at sort of just briefly defining ADHD?
I would say a neurodevelopmental disorder which affects executive function and probably something else.
Yeah, it's pretty much. ADHD.
Word for word from the DSM-5.
Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Now, in the same vein as Asperger's, I want to quickly say out there, if you've got ADD, no, you don't. I'm afraid you have ADHD, but likely it's just inattentive. Oh, hold on. Is it inattentive type?
Yeah.
Yes, inattentive type. So what happened there was we had ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and then we had ADD, attention deficit disorder. And basically, if you weren't hyperactive on the outside, you had ADD. If you were hyperactive on the outside, you had ADHD. They've now been folded into the same thing. It's broadly split into three types, inattentive, hyperactive, or combined, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And like ultimately, I feel, in my experience of people with ADHD, most people display, you know, they may lean heavily to one side if they have one type, heavily to another side if they have another type. But most people display at least some from, you know, the type they don't have, if that makes sense, right? If you're inattentive type, you will still probably display some hyperactivity there. But so ADHD, it is a a neurodevelopmental condition, disorder that affects attention, that affects executive function, a lot of different areas. And yes, the kind of way it's viewed is, oh, Bart Simpson is hyper and doesn't listen to rules. And that is a really poor way of viewing it, because it means that, you know, for example, people like me slip through the cracks. For example, right? Okay, so I've said this in the podcast before.
Because you do not look like Bart Simpson.
I look exactly like Bart Simpson. Thank you very much. He is yellow. No. No, but what I mean is that, you know, the idea is that people with ADHD are bad in school. Not necessarily the case. I was good in school. And you know why? School is easy for me. I'm very good at just reading a thing and remembering the thing. And understanding the concepts in school and all, I found it very straightforward, to be honest, right? And if I get interested in something, easy.
Yeah.
I was interested in science. I was interested in all of the subjects that I did to, like, you know, throughout school. So very straightforward and easy for me. Did I remember to do homework? Nah. Did that matter because I got good grades anyway? There you go. So I think I just want to pull apart people's sort of preconceptions of what ADHD and also autism are, because they're not necessarily just what you think you are. I think, Luke, when you said that they affect ADHD affects executive function, I think that's probably the best way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Because when it comes to the difficulties of living with ADHD, pretty much all of them come are related to, let's say, executive function or impulsivity. Generally, when you see people talking about them, that's the kind of trend that I see. Either you're not able to do something or you're not able to stop yourself from doing something, you know? But that's broadly what ADHD is.
Interestingly enough, autism also affects executive functions, which is less known. That's usually...
Are you reading my notes, man? Are you skimming ahead?
Sorry, well,
no, go on.
And that's also, so there are many overlaps like this one, for instance, but it tends to manifest or affect people in different ways. But autism also covers executive function, which is something that my colleague Sheila Henson talks a lot about, because earlier I said that I was a coach for the Meerkat squad, but it's important that I mention that I'm one of three. Mm-hmm. So I didn't start it myself. So there's also Sheila and Lena, my colleagues, who there's three of us. I'm not taking credit or the credit for me. Thought it was important that I mentioned that.
Meerkats roam in packs. We know that. That's all
yes.
good. No worries. So let's just quickly cover the prevalence and some stats on ADHD, and then we can get into the real meat of the episode. If we look at it globally, in kids, it's about 5% of kids are estimated to have ADHD. Mm. Yeah, which at that point, right, 5% of people.
That's more than there are gingers.
True. It's more
Do
than
I
there
have
are,
a hair condition?
There's more than there are people in many countries, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you look at it that way, it's not terribly uncommon. And if you look at it as just a sort of, this is disorder, this is a way your brain goes wrong. Well, is it that, or is it just another neurotype, right? I mean, if we really break it down, neurotypicals, and that's meaning people, you know, that don't have a neurodivergent condition or a neurodevelopmental disorder or anything along those lines, are neurotypicals even all the same neurotype? Probably not, right? Probably not. The thing is, we've spoken about this before in the episode that we did about Freud. When it comes to psychology or anything to do with that sort of area, you know, when it comes to people and how they work, putting people into boxes is very useful. But we need to remember that the boxes aren't real. And when we draw very hard lines around these boxes and say, this box is a real thing, and everyone in it, they are defined by this real box. Bad thing to do. Probably going to get yourself into some trouble.
Earlier, when we were talking about all of those terms that keep changing, and for people listening, it might sound like, well, you know, that's so many labels flying around, and then one minute you're this, and then the next minute you're that. But it's also important to remember that those are labels, and labels can be useful. So if it helps you, then by all means, use the label. But some people are not comfortable with labels. So, you know, that all of those positions and relationships with labels are valid. To some people, having a label such as autism or ADHD is validating, because it confirms that their experience or things that they've experienced all their lives, it lets them know that, other people have thought about it, other people have theorized about it, studied it, and so it's not all in their minds.
Because they're not alone.
They're not alone, and they did make it up. So there is value to labels for those who want them. And it's kind of like gender as well. It's like all of those labels, the exact boundaries are completely arbitrary and made up. But if it serves you, by all means, use it. If it does not serve you, do not feel like you have to submit to them. But also, do not try to impose a label on others or deny the labels that they choose for themselves.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I kind of want to piggyback off of what you were saying there with gender. I'm going to go back to one of my favorite little analogies that I use. Luke, do you remember this one? So,
oh, God.
Yeah,
oh,
no, not that one. Okay. No, that one. The good one. The good one. So,
I mean, yeah, that was pretty good. But no, just take some explaining.
Stop. So, gender, I kind of see it as being somewhat similar to color, right? So if we look at green and blue next to each other, right, it's a little gradient between green and blue. If we zoom in as far as we can into the middle of that gradient, what is that color going to be? It's going to be an exactly in between green and blue. Now, if we zoom out, the difference between green and blue is quite obvious, right? You could be like, that color's green, that color's blue, that color's green, that color's blue. If I was to ask you to point at something, like if I was to point at something and say, what color is that chair? You'd say that's a blue chair, okay? That's fine. But when we get into the sort of colors in between, it gets really difficult. People can disagree and we have to come up with new names. Like I asked this question in a YouTube video at one point. I was like, okay, what is this color? An exact mix of green and blue. What would you call it? If it's either green or blue, which is it? People said teal. And I'm like, well, there you go. You've just proven that if you've got someone that is not exactly, you know, fitting into either of these two boxes and they're like right in the middle and you're trying to decide which one they are, coming up with a new label is something that we do all the time. Yeah. It's just being more specific, right? You know, if you want to say that there are only two sexes, male and female, and you do a lot of finagling to try and get everyone who's intersex into either of those two boxes, you could maybe do it. Would it be useful?
Yeah.
In some contexts, in most contexts, probably not. Regardless, there are going to be those fuzzy little edges there. And a lot of people live in those fuzzy edges, right? And so thinking of these boxes as hard lines rather than gradients with fuzzy edges, sort of spectrums, things blending into each other where we draw lines, same as species, right? If we look at evolution, right? At what point did the red jungle fowl become the chicken? I don't know, because at one point there was a red jungle fowl, and then at another point in time there was a chicken, and at some point halfway between that there was a cross between those two or something evolving from one into the other. You can't do that. You can't just draw a line between, you'd have to literally draw a line between one organism and its offspring. That's like saying, okay, I'm a human, but my son is human plus. I don't know why I'm using plus so much.
Well, yeah, I would say you can do that, but you have to be aware that it's arbitrary and that it, you know, it's a made up decision.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can do it if it helps. If it helps
people,
if it's useful, then yeah, do it by all means. But also remember that it's made up. It's a social construct. It's dependent on your culture, your perception.
Draw the lines, but remember the lines are like arbitrary, right? Like, oh gosh. And we look at things in such a sort of large scale so often that species seem, and that's why I like bringing that one up, because species seems like such an obvious thing to someone. If I say to someone, define species, they probably say, it's the group of organisms that can, you know, produce fertile offspring with each other. The same thing they all learned in high school biology. I'm sorry, high school biology is simple. And there's a reason for that. It's because it's for high schoolers. And compared to high-level biologists, they're rather simple. No offense, high schoolers. Lots of us are too in the area of biology. But the point is that you need to kind of break your preconceived notions. But there we go. That's kind of an overview of ADHD and autism. But why don't we get into the sort of comorbidities when they kind of come together within the same person?
In perfect chaos. Yes.
Ding-a-ling-ling, that's the ad bell, and we've cleaned up Luke's wee.
I'm so happy to be free of piss and here to talk to you about SciGuys Live in London.
Whether you want to smell Luke's piss in person or you want to see it on a screen online, you can get a ticket for that at sciguys.co.uk/tickets. And like we said, you get a live podcast, you get a Q&A, you get to meet and or greet us.
And you get a quick fire quiz and see our never-before-seen merchandise.
And not just see it, you can get your grubby little mitts on it, and for the exchange of monetary things, you can take it away with you. But you can't take away your special guest.
Who's that?
Janelle Williams. You know that, Luke.
Fantastic. Well, get your tickets now at sideguys.co.uk/tickets with a 20% discount for patrons. My piss is not guaranteed.
It is guaranteed on you if you don't get a ticket. And that is a threat. Let's get on with the show.
Get on with the show.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So let's talk about the comorbidity of autism and ADHD. Just right off the bat, throw me out a guess at the... I don't actually want you to guess this, George, because you'll probably know it. Look, throw me out a guess at the range of estimates for the comorbidity of those two.
Somewhere between 10% and 30%.
Oh, you're wrong. I can't believe how bad that guess was. I'm sorry. Estimates go as low as 37% and as high as 78%.
What?
Yeah, you were like not even in the right range.
So my top bar was like below the bottom bar.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so high.
It's very
high, right?
They
should just give you an autism diagnosis immediately after your ADHD diagnosis at this rate.
Dude, the number of papers I've read where they're saying, yeah, so we should probably start testing people for both if they come in to look for one,
because
it saves time, right? And so, I mean, I've already mentioned this. George already mentioned this. The DSM-4 specified that an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis is an exclusion criterion for ADHD, thereby limiting research of this common clinical co-occurrence. I mean, that was back then. And bear in mind, what I want to really point out is that autism is still, as a sort of concept, is still developing. Mm-hmm. Again, we thought that, and people still think this, like I genuinely was watching a documentary the other day wherein someone said, oh, I didn't realize that that I could have autism or my girls could have autism because I thought autism only happened to boys. And look, I understand why people think that culturally. Sure. I understand where they get that information from. But knowing the sort of, let's say, having some insight into genetics and biology, having studied biology at university, biotechnology to be 100% clear, but knowing a little bit about that, I'm just like, what would the actual mechanism there be for autism only existing in boys?
It's on one of the chromosomes. It's on the Y chromosome.
It's on one of the chromosomes.
Whichever one. I can't remember which
the
one.
Y, yeah, yeah, the Y. Yeah, but even that, like, oh yeah, autism is located on the Y chromosome. Exactly. Like, what? But it's really interesting. It's been developing for some time. Again, initially it was just little white boys, and now it's little white boys and sometimes anyone else they can be bothered to look at.
Yeah. And yeah, I am an example of that as well. Because of the mis, and I think that this speaks on the TikTok autism thing really well, is that a lot of people, yes, it is true that there are probably, and I'm one of them, people who realized that they were autistic thanks to TikTok. But it's not that TikTok had turned them autistic. It's just that there is such heavy misconceptions around autism that suddenly having access to other experiences of autism that did not fit those stereotypes and misconceptions allowed so many people to realize, wait, but I do have that too. I didn't think I was autistic because I don't do this or that.
I
have friends. Yeah. I don't like trains, or I'm not like completely obsessed with maths, or, you know, I have friends. For me, the main thing is I felt hyper socially aware, as opposed, and I'd had always been told that autistic people were people who were basically completely oblivious, who couldn't create meaningful social connections. And I was like, well, that's not me. But funny enough, I get on really well with people who are exactly that stereotype. Like, I seem to be friends with the cool kids and also the nerds and people who turned out to be autistic later. But I was like, but I can't be autistic myself. So that was one of the main reasons.
Something I've heard from a couple of people as well, if we're talking about this, which is so painful just to hear, is that people, I've known a couple of people that are like, oh, well, actually, no, I didn't struggle to make friends. I was really popular in school. You know, I was friends with the popular kids and they kept me around and, oh, they were bullying me and I didn't realize. You know what I mean? This is something we've spoken about many times on the podcast because it comes into so many different areas of, you know, life wherein, you know, your perception limits, or not necessarily limits, but your perception controls what you can understand, right? So if, for example, you have aphantasia, you can't really see images in your head, you're going to think when people say, oh, picture it, like, you know, picture it in your mind's eye or whatever, that they're being entirely metaphorical and that, you know, you just got to think about the thing. And then you find out that other people can actually see pictures in their head and you're like, wait, what? This doesn't, I don't understand that, right? So for someone who is autistic and perhaps has a little touch of black, white thinking and all of these sorts of things and takes things very sort of literally, you might misunderstand some of the descriptions of autism and not even realize that those are the experiences that you're having. So autism and ADHD, there are, this is the thing, we've spoken about a lot of this already. There are a few things that sort of overlap there. We've already spoken about the different sort of prevalences that, I mean, there are so many different estimates here. And when you take into account as well the underdiagnosis of both of these things, particularly in some groups of people, who knows which groups of people, it's always the same ones, you know, it becomes an even more complex issue to look at, right? So I did find this sort of study that was looking at I think this was a review that looked at a bunch of different studies, but anyway, so what it's got here is looking at the overlap between autism, ADHD and intellectual disability. And what they found was that in a population of kids diagnosed with autism, autism spectrum disorder, the rate of ADHD and autism was 42%, and the rate of ADHD plus autism plus intellectual disability was 17%, which had a total 59% total comorbidity rate of ADHD and autism, which is, like, mad. And then it also points out that there are differences in age of sort of noticing differences, parents noticing differences in their child's development, also differences in age where medical sort of help was sort of sought. There's a lot of interesting information in this, actually. You should go and check this one out. This one is the comorbidity of ADHD in children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder from 2016, linked below as all the references are. But the average age of diagnosis was over 6 years for kids with autism and ADHD, but close to 2.5 for kids with autism only. So when there's a comorbidity there, it seems as though it can impact how long it takes for you to get a diagnosis, or, you know, for any of these sort of differences to even be found in the first place.
Yeah, because some of the key traits of either autism or ADHD can be cancelled out by the other neurotype. So depending on, when you look at the diagnosis criteria, sometimes it may look like you don't have. Well, in my case, for instance, when I was going through the ADHD diagnosis, there were a whole series of questions that did not apply to me, which I didn't think. I just thought, well, you know, that's fine. Not everything. I can't tick all the boxes. That doesn't mean I'm not ADHD. But now looking back at it, I realized that those specific areas were cancelled out by my autism. And that's the reason why it didn't apply to me, and vice versa.
One is masking the other, right?
So, yeah. You know, sometimes they can be masking the other. Sometimes they compound.
Oh, literally cancelling out? You mean like actually like destructive interference, like literally one cancels the other out? That is.
Well, but also because we're talking already about two spectrums, ADHD and autism, and even people would use, rather than a spectrum on a line, they would say it's a disc, or you could even say it's a sphere, where like you can be on any given point in that space. So we're already talking about things that are, as you said, very fuzzy, with very fuzzy edges. So if you look at the the overlap of two fuzzy mm-hmm. things, that also exists on the spectrum. So some people who are ADHD, so who have both autism and ADHD, they might feel like that ADHD affects their everyday lives much more than autism. For other people, it would be autism that affects them much more. And it's also highly dependent on the context.
Absolutely,
maybe
yeah.
someone will face more difficulties with their ADHD at work, but once they're at home, it's their autism that influences their experience. So that changes within among people and also within the same person, depending on the context. That can be also completely different. So it's a huge range.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, right? Let's say your job is something where you need to motivate yourself, right? You need to do a lot of your own work. ADHD is going to make that bloody difficult, right? Yeah. It's going to be hard if you have self-imposed deadlines, or it could be hard, you know, depending on your experience. But you know, if then your social life is, you know, very full with other things, then that's maybe where autism is something that's more sort of recognized. And you know, if you've got a job where you don't need to speak to other people, you're probably not going to really like notice any issues regarding autism at work, because the things don't come up. If you're entirely in sort of under your own sort of purview, that's probably more likely to fly under the radar. I mean, if we talk about these different sort of diagnostic criteria almost canceling each other out or masking each other, one thing that everyone, I would say almost everyone, knows about autism is the routine aspect of autism, right? We won't get into necessarily the sort of underlying cause of that, but if we make a very broad and simple statement that many autistic people find comfort in routines, right? If we make that statement,
absolutely.
A lot of people with ADHD can't stick to a routine to save their goddamn life, right? And so when you see these two things like working together, or rather working against each other, I've heard people talk about how I need a routine to feel comfortable, but I cannot stick to a routine at all.
Absolutely.
So I'm constantly stressed, which is like...
It's the case for many people with ADHD. An example where, in my case, I experience it as cancelling each other out is, for instance, yes, I have ADHD, but that I never lose stuff, because in my house, it's always a mess. Like, you know, it's very messy, but everything has its own place, and I have my routine. So whenever I leave the house, I know exactly, it's like muscle memory almost, where the keys are. I grab my keys, and so, you know, and that's the autistic side that helps me counter the messiness of the ADHD. And in that specific aspect, I would say that it helps. But there are other situations, notably around executive functions, where they compound and they both kick me from both sides. So
sometimes one of them is like on your side, and sometimes both of them. This is the thing. And I think the reason that I want to do this episode is, you know, we could say, yeah, we've got an autism episode, yeah, we've got an ADHD episode, we've actually got a wealth of those, because we can't shut up about them. But that doesn't really get into the experience of both. It's almost that intersectionality, right? Is it harder to be, you know, what is it, a white woman or a black man? Like a white woman or a black man? You don't go to ask a black woman to say, like, hey, which of these things is harder for you? Because you can't separate out those things, right? Yeah. That's a key point of intersectionality there, wherein if someone is, you know, both black and a woman, that creates a unique experience where those things interact with each other in such a way that you can't sort of extricate them to make an experience that is either of those things. And the same goes for, you know, having both autism and ADHD, or being both autistic and having ADHD, right? It creates a unique experience wherein you can't just say, this is all autism, this is all ADHD, and this is where I stand in the middle, necessarily.
Yeah, and also because people do not have any reference points. They've never experienced trying not having autism for a week to see what is actually just the ADHD. So
you really never tried? You should give it a go, honestly.
I reckon
you should, because just ADHD works fine for me, you know?
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, it's almost... That does not necessarily apply to ADHD, because there's treatments, there's medication for ADHD. But, so we could say that we can get a taste of what it would be like to not have ADHD when you're on medication.
I would argue we can't, though. I mean, I'm gonna sit here, and people always want us to disagree on this podcast, and we're finally doing it. Look, I would say that if you were to take medication for ADHD, it doesn't make you not have ADHD.
Yeah.
I still have problems with executive function, even on medication. Like, sure, it makes these decisions easier, it makes it smoother, but I still can get stuck doing literally not a single thing.
Yeah.
Because I've taken the medication and it's given me the drive, but I've not directed myself enough in the right way, so I'm stuck in this, you know? It's like saying just because someone, you know, in a wheelchair gets in a car doesn't mean they're not still, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it does increase your mobility in some ways, but also it limits you in other ways. You know, there are places you can go in a wheelchair, you can't go in a car.
Yeah.
But I do see where you're coming from, wherein there's not really any humane. humane way to have an autistic person not experience what it's like to be autistic.
But
the ways that people say are just torture mostly, right?
Yeah, we can get into ABA, but no, because this is not a purely autistic episode.
You were talking about executive function there, which I find really interesting, right? Or rather executive dysfunction. So it is known that autism and ADHD both are associated, and it says as well, or in some cases defined by executive dysfunction, but people, and this is something I find is taken out of context on TikTok, and I don't want to make it as though I'm saying TikTok is bad. TikTok is a great resource. Unfortunately, while you've got people that are educated on the subject that speak, you know, from research and from lived experience, there's many others. What was her name? Dr. Inna. I'm not Dr. going to remember.
Inna?
Dr. Inna, is that her name?
Well, if
that,
yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. Fantastic as well. Yeah. You know, she's great. And many other people that speak from, you know, education experience. There are also others that will do a quick skim read of, you know, something, and then come on to say, you know, actually, autism and ADHD are the same because they both have executive dysfunction. No, they both are related to executive dysfunction, but in different ways. I mean, what I've got here, I'll just read verbatim. We can discuss it a little bit more. You know, it says children with autism spectrum disorder have more planning and cognitive flexibility difficulties, and children with ADHD have more inhibition difficulties. Right. So the way that this executive function sort of manifests, and the exact sort of things you have sort of difficulties with, aren't necessarily going to be the same, even though they all technically fall under the purview of executive dysfunction. Yeah.
But that's precisely one area where I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Although with medication, I do find it easier, for instance, to get started and to focus, which is what it's supposed to do. So that aspect of executive function, just getting the starter button to work, that does help. But now, what is exactly the autistic aspect of executive dysfunction that I experience? I wouldn't be able to precisely tell.
Yeah, I suppose actually that's another thing that we've not really mentioned yet as well, is that these things sort of working, being sort of present in the same person, means that it's very hard to extricate, as we said, it's hard to extricate those experiences.
Yeah.
But that would also mean then, okay, which of these things is which, right? What is that? And that's when this idea of sort of categories, I think, kind of becomes somewhat problematic, right? Wherein you're trying to decide, okay, does this go in the autism box or the ADHD box? Well, it actually goes in the Joris box, and all of this is just Joris stuff, right? Like
that's why we came up with the meerkats term, because meerkats, they live in community, they live together, but they're also always paying attention, looking around, so they're always focused and distracted at the same time. What was the connection with autism? Now I forget. Meerkats.
ADHD in action. Absolutely. I find it quite interesting, right? And if we talk about executive dysfunction, right? So, for example, I mean, a lot of autistic people could go through burnout. And, you know, obviously, if you're autistic, you can also go through burnout. But there's kind of some unique aspects of burnout when it comes to autism, right?
Yes.
If you got to think about it this way, right? A lot of autistic people are just masking pretty much constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, even amongst loved ones, people they've known for their entire lives, you'll find that when people are diagnosed with autism, that's when they start to work on the process of unmasking.
Yeah.
And I mean, even around people close to them, it's like, oh, this is a different person than I'm used to sort of interacting with in some ways. It's still the same person, but like there are some differences in the way that we interact. And if you think about, you know, all of the stuff that you have to deal with, just as a person going through their life, imagine having to have another sort of program running in your brain at all times, you know, being like, you wait, hold on, do it this way. Don't do the natural thing for you. Do this other thing that you need to put effort into remembering to do.
Yeah.
All of that sort of stuff. And then also you've got textures that are stressing you out and sounds and sensory inputs that are just too much. All of that coming together. Where is the sort of rest, right? Because mm-hmm. you can't always take a rest from, you know, sort of sensory inputs. You can't necessarily unmask at all times. And there are so many other things going on, especially it might take more effort and more work for you to do certain things. And if you've got to leave a routine, for example, that can cause a lot of stress. And then suddenly you're burnt out and you can't do anything and you're unable to, in some cases, unable to care for yourself, right?
Yep.
Like, that is something that could absolutely happen. And that's not necessarily the same thing as me having ADHD and feeling 100% fine. I'm just waiting for the time where I'm able to do the thing. Mm-hmm. Is it time yet? I don't know. Wait till the man clocks on and tells me. Yeah.
And then that can turn into anxiety as well.
Yeah.
So it can affect you negatively, but yeah, absolutely. It's not the same as being over, having your nervous system constantly being attacked by too much information, or you just not having the ability to sort out the information. So that can easily lead to burnout. Autistic burnout can be much more, I would say, deeper, but yeah, it affects you in a much more holistic way. Mm. And in the physical way, it's more than just being tired, but that also affects your emotions. Because I like to say, and that's not scientific, but I like to describe my experience of autism as thinking with emotions. So, you know, which we tend to... There's this misconception that autistic people do not feel things, or do not emote, or don't have empathy. But I would argue, and some autistic people actually have come out to say, no, I don't have empathy. That's true. So I accept that. That's not my experience, but I don't want to invalidate their experience. But I think that a lot of it is simply because we express it differently. Disentangling feelings and thoughts, and it's for me, it's the same thing. So when people tell me that I overthink, it's like, no, I don't overthink. That's the way I feel. So where was I getting?
What?
Oh, yes. So
that's wild.
Okay.
Like, thinking and feeling are very separate. I can think my way out of a feeling if I really, wow.
I think with emotions and I feel with thoughts. So
that's
depending on where you look at it from, it may look like I overthink and over-intellectualize my feelings, but also... people might say that, you know, I get too attached to thoughts and to so because they, for me, they're one and the same. So, you know, for many, many years, I tried all the self-help, and even in therapy, you know, I tried to like stop intellectualizing my feelings and tuning into my feelings. But I think now I'm getting to the point where I'm like, maybe I don't need to do that. Maybe I can just accept that this is part of my neurotype, and I think with my, I feel with my brain, and that's okay. So where I was getting at with this is that when you cannot separate feelings and thoughts, and you have an autistic burnout, then that means that both those aspects of your life are affected. So you can't, the way you feel, and also physically. So that's physical, that's cognitive, that's emotional. All of that gets burned out. So that's much deeper than other types of burnout, or maybe just their ADHD burnout.
And that's a very different experience from mine. I just want to hop on what you said about empathy there, because I think something that's often missed is that people will say autistic people don't have empathy. And that's very much not the case as a rule, right? You know, as a whole, you can't really say that. I think what people are getting at is there's different kinds of empathy, right? You know, I was watching a video about this the other day on TikTok, sorry, but it also related to people that I know personally. We were talking about this, and the thing was, they were like, I don't get when people say I don't have empathy, because if someone says they feel something, I feel that feeling.
Yeah.
I feel it. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. Mm. So that is empathy. But then also, another part of empathy, or a different sort of type of empathy, if we want to look at it that way, is being able to like sort of intellectually sort of understand someone's feelings, yeah, and not necessarily feel them, have that sort of separation and know what it is that they would want to be done in that situation, mm-hmm, right? So empathetically being like, okay, like this person feels sad, and what should I do for that person that feels sad? I should console them in this way that they that they sort of, you know, that they would like. And if you're like, if you are less able to do that sort of second one, and you very much feel someone else's emotions, if someone feels sad around you, and you just immediately feel sad, and it affects you, that's going to make it more difficult for you to display, you know, sort of that outward empathy, yeah, that person is looking for. And mm-hmm, so it could, you know, result in essentially people saying autistic people don't have empathy, when actually what it means is some autistic people are unable to display this external form of empathy, yeah, because of their intense internal experience of empathy.
And also, I guess, picking up, like, as you said there about the idea of like, when I'm told, when someone says that they're sad, I feel sad with them, but people don't generally go, I'm feeling sad, that you pick up on a cue that you sort of infer their sadness, right? And if you don't pick up on that specific cue that you can, from which you can infer their sadness, then you're going to look like you're not empathizing, yeah, with their sadness, but actually you might have just missed something.
Saying about missed something, I want to hop on that as well, because that's another thing that relates sort of between autism and ADHD, in that people say, oh, actually they're really similar, because ADHD people can have issues with social cues too. I don't have issues reading social cues. I'm not paying attention. Like, yeah. I know how, like, if I was paying attention to any of, like, someone will be like, oh, this, and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. That all makes sense. I wish I was mentally present for it, but I wasn't, yeah. You know? And the sensory stuff as well, sort of the other side of that, is that sometimes at parties, I am entirely unable to pay attention to one particular thing, and I'm listening to everything at the same like every voice in the room is the same volume, and someone's talking at me, and I'm like, look, I'm listening to you. I'm going to be listening to you. I'm going to have to look around the room so I'm able to listen to you and pay attention. Don't think that I'm not interested. It's the only way that I can listen to you without hearing every other voice
at the same
level. And
how is that experience when you cannot separate the input in a group conversations, for instance?
I just space out.
Okay.
I just space out, and I find myself doing that in meetings a lot as well, without realizing before diagnosis. I was just like, man, what am I thinking? I'm in a meeting. Yeah, what were they saying? You know, that sort of thing.
And that's very interesting, because I also really struggle when I try to have a conversation with someone and then there's other things around it. But I think that the autistic aspect of it is that it makes me extremely uncomfortable. It makes me want to shout, explode, because I'm just like, shut up! Because, yeah, I want to, and that's why I'm quite very often uncomfortable in group settings. It's because I try to speak to one person, and also I feel like I have a overview or a bird's eye view of the conversation. So whilst I'm trying to pay attention to the person who's talking to me, I'm also following the other conversations, whether I want
yeah,
it or not.
Yeah. Oh,
and and it gets very frustrating, because I'm like, do you not listen to each other? Because
yeah,
I feel like I'm the only one who's paying attention to what everybody's
saying.
You're
hearing all conversation at once, yeah.
But that also means that I pick up on the misunderstandings and the things that yeah, person said, but that person didn't get it, and now they're going off on a tangent because they misunderstood. And it's like, it's just too much for me. And I'm like, listen to one another, please.
Yeah.
I can't be the only one doing this. But yeah, to go back to the overlap, what you said about social cues and the misunderstanding, I think that there's also the misunderstanding in the for autism, and again, I will speak from my experience and the experience of people that I know share with me, but that doesn't mean that all autistic people share that specific experience. But I don't miss or I don't misunderstand social cues. I pick up on them, but I may not know what to do with that information.
Yeah.
So it's not that I did not understand it. I'm like, oh, that person is being aggressive. That person is trying to overpower me now. But I may not, or that person is feeling sad and is actually, the subtext is that they are asking for compassion and they feel
yeah,
unheard and frustrated. Actually, I feel like I pick up on more cues than other people, but it's the what we do with it that is, and what is expected of me with that information that I may not feel have a appropriate reaction, but it's not because I didn't understand it. It's I don't know what
you
to
have
do
a social
with this.
Script for it,
and that kind of goes exactly. That goes back exactly to what you said right at the top, really, which is about the DSM-5 being overly focused on external. Yeah. Is that would look like you don't pick up on the social cue, or you have inappropriate responses to social cues, or whatever. But actually, it's just that you're like, okay, I picked up on everything, but I don't necessarily know what I'm meant to do with that information.
And again, when you give that information to a group of people who are in some ways defined by a quite literal thinking, you're going to run into problems. Like, I've been seeing so many people come forward and say, oh, you know, I didn't realize I had literal thinking because I thought about it very literally, and I didn't realize that literal thinking was the thing that I was doing.
Yes.
And it's like, look, it's very funny. It's not great. It's indicative of a number of problems in our society, but also it is quite funny to miss literal thinking by thinking about it too literally. And again, it just shows how poorly sort of we describe these things for people.
But I think that's also sort of compounded by the fact that we have these stereotypes around what an ADHD person looks like and what an autistic person looks like. In the ADHD kid in school to me was like the naughty one, right?
Yeah. Mm.
And so then you necessarily, firstly, out of wanting to fit in, and also because you're not adhering to the stereotype that you have, you think of yourself as, I'm not an autistic person, I'm not an ADHD person. So then you kind of get confirmation bias where, like, if there's something that someone says, something that, like, this is what autistic people will do, this is what ADHD people do, and there's like some way in which you could misinterpret it in order to uphold your view of yourself as not being an ADHD person, you might do that because you don't think that that's you, because you're adhering to this, you think it's like they all adhere to the stereotype, so it's not me.
Yeah. I just want to, that's so true. Do you know what's really interesting? It reminds me of sort of some people that I know who have come off as being very cool. And the thing is that they are very cool, but the reason people think they're cool is because they don't say very much. And the reason they don't say very much is because they're autistic and they don't know what to say. And it's just like it's really funny to me that you sort of like stumble your way into seeming like really cool
so
and
mysterious.
Suave and mysterious. And it's just, you're just like, I have no idea what to say in this situation.
Oh, is this the moment that I try? Oh, no. Oh, somebody's saying something else. Oh, what were we talking about? Ah, but I wanted to say something three conversations ago.
But to hop back to what you were saying before about being very aware of all these social cues, do you think that might be because you feel the need to be so aware because you're not sort of necessarily intuitively just picking up on them? You're like, in sort of almost subconsciously making the effort to pick up on them, you know?
Well, so yeah, thank you for this question. I think that there's a part of that is, well, so some people explain it that way. So that analogy, I didn't come up with it. But I really like it. But it's how autistic people, they can have special interests and they can really dive really deep into those special interests. And for some autistic people, their special interest is people and the way that they think.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the difference, the difference between autistic people and holistic people, so the people who are not autistic, certain things will be natural, so they don't have to think about them. It's just the way it is, especially when we talk about socializing and interactions and conversations. It's something that they might not know as toddlers, but they learn and they pick up on, and they don't even think. Whereas for autistic people, we don't have that natural thing. So that means that we have to observe and to study people. And the thing with autistic people, some of the autistic traits is when we study something, we are thorough about
it. Get into it, yeah.
So this is how you might end up with the other extreme with autistic people who are actually really, really good at studying, observing, picking up on things that holistic people would not pick up on, because for them it's just like a normal thing, whereas for us we're extremely attentive to that and almost sometimes hyper attentive. So this is how you end up with certain autistic people looking like, well, appearing that, you know, they can't be autistic because they're highly socially aware, they pick up on cues, and they and actually no, it's literally also their autism that does that.
Yeah.
It's not that it's an autistic trait that they don't have. It's they have it to an extent and in a specific way that makes them hyper aware and hyper attentive.
Yeah. And do you know what? You brought up hyperfixations there and special interest. And I just want to briefly touch on those before we get into maybe some underlying causes and then try and wrap this massive topic up. But people will say also that hyperfixation and special interest are the same. Very simple way to differentiate the two. If you forget about it after like a month, that's not a special interest, bro. That's not. Like, look, I mean, the number, if you go through the drawers in this room, do not. If you go through the drawers in this room, you will find a number of abandoned projects, a number of things that I'm like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. And then it's in a drawer and I'm like, oh, wait, this thing. Yeah, I forgot entirely about that. Whereas if something's like a special interest, like you could pick up more throughout your life and maybe like some will kind of like fade and kind of ebb and flow, but they're more constant than a hyperfixation, yeah. I would imagine.
And with someone with ADHD, I can have both. So they have long running.
What a treat.
Yes. but yeah, so I've got my long running, special interest, and then some rabbit holes that I fall down for days or weeks. Or sometimes I go back to old special interests that had been dormant for a few months or years, and then I'm back at it. But yeah, so.
I'm not autistic, right? But every now and then, for a period of maybe whenever a new Pokemon game comes out, I have to take time off work. I used to take 2 days off work. Now that I'm self-employed, I will work a 40-hour week of playing Pokemon. I literally, the first week the Pokemon game came out, I played it for 40 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a problem. I physically cannot put it down. So if I start, there's no stopping me. But it's not something that is like, all the knowledge I've got on it is because I retain knowledge, and every single time I've just gotten really deeply invested in it, it's just stuck there. The same with literally everything I talk about on this podcast. Like, all of the people sometimes are like, Corey, what's the answer to this? And I'm like, stop asking me questions. I don't know the answer to all the questions. I will, if I don't know the answer to this one, yes, I will find it out and I'll tell you and I'll remember it for the next time someone asks me, but I don't know things. Stop pretending like I know things. I have a collection of facts that I've gathered accidentally throughout my life. But it's very much, I don't think that there's anything that I could point to and I'm like, yeah, this is something that I'm like hyper obsessed with and have been, like The Simpsons, but also, again, just being really, really intensely invested in something and being unable to lose information from my brain.
It's also just the dopamine, I reckon.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good, Luke. Also, the sort of social interaction stuff, right? Like, as a kid, I struggled to make friends because I was annoying as all hell. I still am, but I'm better at pretending I'm not sometimes. And so
you're masking being annoying as all hell.
Oh, yeah, buddy. And this is a thick old mask.
But also, you're in a social position that rewards some of that, would have been annoying then. Yeah.
That's why I have a podcast, to just feed my ADHD. Get to do a new thing every single bloody week. Got deadlines every week. Oh, do I get to be annoying on camera? Yes, I do. But also, like, I learned like some things from watching sitcoms. I'm like, oh, this is how people interact, because I wasn't interacting with people all that much because people didn't want to interact with me. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, you can't just do this, because like, people get really upset when you act like life is a sitcom and make a really mean joke at them. But I'm like, I know that, right? I know that. But there's a lot of overlaps. And if we talk about the kind of underlying causes, there are some different ideas there, right? There's sort of one idea that they're two very separate things. There's just one underlying cause that can result in both of them, right? That, that there's one thing that can tie them together. And there's another idea that they're much more related than that, right? That the causes of them are pretty sort of intertwined there. I know those sound like the same sort of thing, but they're not. Do you know what I mean there? So there's one situation wherein these two unrelated things are linked by something else that has a chance of causing them both, right? And then there's the other situation where it's the same thing. It's the only cause. There's one cause, and it can manifest as either of them or both of them.
That sounds like the same thing you're saying twice.
I know it does, but it isn't. There is like a semantic.
To it twice and it,
okay. There's a semantic difference that is difficult to sort of. But
can
yeah,
I invite my autism sense of analogies into this? Well, it seems like in the first example, there's actually three things happening. Mm-hmm. And both ADHD and autism would be sort of, if we look at evolution, they would have evolved from the same common ancestor.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, whereas the other one, you're saying it's the same thing, but two different sides of the same thing. So mm-hmm. they can either manifest on one side or the other side, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's different manifestations of yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very careful when we say it's the same thing, because
not the same
we this appear is, yeah. to be validating. It's funny also, cycles on TikTok, because every 6 months there would be a new generation of creators who yeah. think they've come, oh, I just figured it out. Yeah, it's actually the same thing.
Guys, no, I read a Wikipedia page and I think you've all been missing something. Knock, 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 scientists, you're wrong. But go on.
Yeah, well, I was just trying to picture what you were saying, but also making sure that what either you or I are saying is not misconstrued into sounding like we are going in the direction of saying that ADHD and autism are the same thing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the difference here is that in one case, there is a third separate sort of, disorder, right, that is linking these two. As in, this third disorder is related to ADHD, and it could also be related to autism. And so if this third disorder is there, then it's like, oh, well, you can maybe both, right? And the alternative explanation to that is that ADHD and autism inherently share an underlying sort of cause. Now, that's different from them both being somewhat related to another disorder, because those are three independent disorders. Mm. Having a similar underlying cause that could present in one way, another, and when I say underlying cause, I mean, these are really complex genetic factors, right? So I'm not saying that these are the same thing. I'm just saying that these same factors could result in any of these different things. And that's somewhat supported. Again, check all of the links down there in the description, and don't take my word for it entirely on this, because I'm reading this from a paper and I've not studied this. So
yeah.
What I'm saying could very well be not entirely correct. But there are some twin studies and family studies and whatnot that kind of give the idea that the latter model is more likely to be correct. But again, have a look into it yourself, because I find it very interesting.
But also, I think there's a caveat to be put here. Just be aware that, looking into the causes, that can very quickly devolve into eugenics.
Yes. Yay! So it's our something to
keep in mind. I personally am more interested in understanding the lived experience mm-hmm. of people who are autistic or ADHD or both, and looking at how we can make that experience better and broaden the knowledge on what's happening currently happening, rather than look into the origins of it and the causes, because very quickly, and that does not happen automatically, and that's definitely not what you were doing, but very quickly we can slip into if we understand the origin, can we just try to make sure it doesn't happen?
Yeah, for example, as soon as you find out, oh, well, here's the gene that causes gayness.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want a gay kid. Get rid of that gene, And that is eugenics. We've spoken about that in our eugenics episode, in our gay gene episode, in a number of episodes, actually. That's why I said it's our favorite topic, because it comes up so bloody much. We don't like eugenics. We just like talking about it so people know how horrible it is. But yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. Trying to find a cause, especially sort of genetic cause, is a very dangerous game to play, because some people are terrible. Simply put, some people are terrible. Yeah. Well, and that's probably a decent place to end it. Yeah, some people are terrible. But that is probably time to sort of bring it to a close. I mean, we've talked about a lot here. There's a lot of overlap between ADHD and autism, in terms of there are a lot of people who have both ADHD and autism, but that doesn't mean that ADHD and autism themselves as the concepts, as the disorders that we see them as, are overlapping in what they are. You can very distinctly have ADHD without being autistic at all, and vice versa, but there is a unique experience that's created by both of these things being present in one person, right? And that's really bloody interesting. And thank you for joining us there, Joris. There's just thing left to do. It's a quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. ADHD edition.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer wins. What do they win, Luke?
An unfollowable routine.
Bloody brilliant one, Luke. What is your buzzer?
Oh.
And Joris, what is your buzzer?
Much more pleasant than mine.
And my question for you both is... roughly, what is the range of comorbidity between ADHD and autism?
Oh,
Luke, go for it.
Sorry, Joris. Between 37 and 70%.
Oof, that was very, very close. It was actually between 37 and 78%.
Oh, the flip.
Joris, do you want to go in for the steal?
37 and 78.
Ding, 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 that is correct.
Well done.
You win an unfollowable routine. Well done.
Yeah, I didn't do the buzz, though.
Sounds like Joris has enough unfollowable routines as it is.
Well, I think that's a good time for us to end it here. Thank you very much for joining us, Joris. Is there anywhere that people can find you?
Yeah, if they look really hard. No. I'm on TikTok at Joris_explains. I am on Instagram, Joris.Lachen. I have a YouTube channel, but I haven't uploaded in years. The Meerkat Squad that we regularly host. So if you Google Meerkat Squad, and you will probably end on the page of my colleague and friend Sheila Henson.
Like down below.
Okay. Oh yeah, do that. Yeah, technology, amazing.
Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Dinito and Glitch Rabbit, and thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Monday, and when it leaves a nice wee review, you can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find a contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. And it's SciGuys on TikTok too! Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod.
Oh, beautiful.
@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Yeah, you can follow me as well if you want. I don't know what to say. That. Yeah.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.